and move on to the next case for this morning. Doctors Associates against David M. Dury.
May it please the court, the district court dismissed the counterclaims of Mr. Giannata, Ms. Basucci, and myself without prejudice, pending the outcome of an appeal in the state court.
Given that this was a dismissal without prejudice, and given the fact that the district court's order doesn't actually say anything about the Giannata and Basucci counterclaim, why do we have jurisdiction? Why isn't this simply an interlocutory order over which we have no jurisdiction?
Well, the district court dismissed all counterclaims, at least it's the party's understanding, our party's understanding, that the district court dismissed all counterclaims. If the court would look at the two orders in question, which are in the appendix.
It doesn't list by number the counterclaims.
No.
Not in Blascuda.
And actually, it states that David M. Dury and Associates PC filed a three-count counterclaim, and in actuality,
right,
David Dury did.
That didn't happen. But what about the without prejudice thing? Our court has a lot of cases that say if there's simply a voluntary dismissal without prejudice, and if you read the court's order, it seems clearly to contemplate that more proceedings can happen, says all the discovery will apply. He's holding back and waiting to see what happens in that Illinois case to the extent it may have some bearing. It may not have much bearing at all, since some of the parties are different, some of the claims are different. It may have a lot of bearing, but he's taking a wait-and-see approach. That, we would normally say, isn't a final order.
If that were the case, Judge Wood, I would think Judge Steele should have issued a stay order, not a dismissal order. He definitely dismissed.
I know it says, but he also says dismiss without prejudice. And this court
right.
has discussed that particular phraseology. And we sometimes have allowed people to convert dismissals to be with prejudice on appeal just to make sure that there really is a final order. But dismissal
what?
Without prejudice is
it dismissed.
Troublesome.
I understand, Judge. And the order was troublesome because it didn't rely on any of the merits. However, the order itself dismissed the counterclaims and said it could be refiled, i.e. a new lawsuit, and the counterclaims were the only pending claims.
Well,
so everything in the lawsuit was disposed of by the court's order, as I understand the court's
but
order.
But not finally disposed of, right? Because as you yourself well, say, they can be refiled, and in your reply brief, you even say, I'm looking at page 16, you say it twice, but one of the places you say it is, you say, affirmance of the dismissal without prejudice on the grounds that the counterclaims failed to state a cause of action seemingly asks this court for an advisory opinion. Well, as you well know, you know, we don't give advisory opinions.
I understand, Your Honor, but in this case, I would point out to the court that the orders below, number one, require the counterclaimants to wait until the state court case is over. Number two, to refile in a new lawsuit their counterclaims. So
that's always true with dismissals without prejudice, right? It's always a new lawsuit, a new filing fee, and so on. So I don't know how that distinguishes this dismissal without prejudice from others that we have said are not
final. Well, the second ground for this court's jurisdiction is it's an injunction. It is taking a counterclaim that the court is not addressing our merits and say we're dismissing it without prejudice pending state court proceedings.
How is it an injunction?
You can't refile it until the state court proceedings are over. It's very similar to the case of Swerdrup versus the Edwardsville School District.
That's an abstention case, though.
That is true, but that's what the court did.
It doesn't analyze a word about abstention. We don't know if it's abstaining or not abstaining. Or.
Well, it didn't rely on the merits. It took the only claims remaining in the case, the counterclaims, dismissed them without prejudice until a state court proceeding is over. That is an injunction prohibiting the counterclaimants from having their counterclaims heard on the merits or even having them refiled until the state court proceedings is over. That's nothing more than an abstention ruling. There was no reason for the court not to rule on the motions to dismiss the counterclaims on the merits under Rule 12b-6, which were pending before the court.
What the court could have done, and for all I know, what the court should have done, is not quite the same thing as our needing to cope with what the court did do, and that's my problem with this.
Right. Well, that would be, Judge Wood, that would be the equivalent to someone filing a complaint and the court dismisses it without prejudice, and so you can refile it again sometime in the future. Not on the grounds that you don't state a cause of action and can refile and replead, but on the grounds that there's a related proceeding that once it's decided, it might cause me to apply the Rooker-Feldman doctrine or give full faith and credit to what happens in the state court proceedings. But the judge still did not determine that Rooker-Feldman applied or that full faith and credit or collateral estoppel or any of those other doctrines applied, because if he did, that would have been a ruling on the merits, which could have been appealed. He just said that might happen at some time in the future. So it would be like dismissing a complaint without prejudice and saying you can refile it at some time in the future in another lawsuit, but therefore you can't appeal this decision. You just got to wait until the state court decision is over. It is very much the same situation as Swerbeck versus the Edwardsville School District, except the judge entered a dismissal without prejudice instead of a stay order. And it's I think it's Yeswak, which says it's inappropriate to enter a dismissal without prejudice under those circumstances, as opposed to a stay order. So the court has jurisdiction because when the merit resolved by the plaintiff in the case. And the judge clearly intended that if you look at the order of March the 6th, in which he allowed the dismissal of the complaint, counts 2, 3, 4 without prejudice, count 5 with prejudice, he specifically referred to the pending counterclaim from Tomato and Valsucci.
But that's a separate issue.
Okay, then he dismissed.
Whether that's done or not, we'll have to decide. But, normally, actually, when it looks like perhaps some hanging counterclaims haven't been done, we'll even do a limited remand to a district court to make sure that the court really did intend to dispose of the whole case.
Well, at a minimum, the judge should clarify.
There's the additional problem without prejudice.
Well, that's right. We wanted the judge to rule on the merits of the counterclaim and the 12b-6 motions to dismiss. The plaintiffs did not ask for dismissal without prejudice. The court said it was granting the motion, but they were asking for dismissal with prejudice. So the counterclaims here are in limbo. Under the court's order, if they refiled a new lawsuit immediately, they could be held in contempt for violating the court's order that they have to wait until the state court proceedings is over. But none of the claims in the state court proceeding are the same claims between the same parties as any of the counterclaims here. Neither would the state court proceedings ever result in a resolution on the merits of any claim that is asserted as a counterclaim.
Well, there are issues about that we might not ever reach, but given that there are some overlaps, there could be some issue preclusion as to some parties, depending on who decides who's in privity with whom and other kinds of issues.
Well,
I certainly agree with you that there's plenty of non-overlap as well, but
it's established that with parallel proceedings, a federal court is not to await the proceedings in the state court to decide issues of state court law, but is to proceed, and if it's
you're
not that proceeding,
about a river, which again,
there would be an abstention ruling, which the court did not address, but in reality,
the court never addresses Colorado River, which sometimes does require abstention.
It was an abstention ruling, I would submit to the court.
Okay. All right. Well, if you'd like to save a little bit of your time for rebuttal, I will allow you to do that.
Okay. I will. Thank you,
okay. Mr. Kennedy.
Good morning. Mr. Durian and I are in a funny position.
So why do we have jurisdiction of this appeal, Mr. Kennedy?
We're in a funny position because we agree with him. It's a funny order to try to interpret, but it really does seem to be a Colorado River abstention order. I don't know.
With no analysis whatsoever of any of the factors that Colorado River requires courts to look at. We don't even know if that's what the district court thought he was doing. All we have is this dismissal without prejudice, which, as you probably know, you know, this court has often dismissed on jurisdictional grounds appeals that are from dismissals without prejudice, where it seems that the court has taken steps to make sure that the case can be refiled at some time. Now, if the statute of limitations runs, or if other things happen to make a refiling as a practical matter impossible, that's different, because it converts into a dismissal effectively with prejudice at that point. Appellate jurisdiction is fine.
Well, except that dismissal without prejudice doesn't necessarily mean you have to refile a lawsuit. You can move to vacate the dismissal in the same lawsuit without refiling.
And I understand that. My point is, because the dismissal without prejudice says that he's doing it because there's a parallel state court case, when you look at Colorado River abstention, that's the reason why federal courts will abstain in favor of state court jurisdiction. And it seems like, again, we didn't ask for abstention. We did not file a motion to dismiss without prejudice. We filed a motion to dismiss with prejudice. So.
And why didn't you file a cross appeal when you didn't get what you asked for? You certainly got considerably less from the district court than you thought you were entitled to, since you thought you were entitled to dismissal with prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't file a cross appeal here. And your opponent points out that without a cross appeal, we really can't just go ahead and give you more relief than you asked for.
Well, I don't know. The case is dismissed. I think that there were ample alternative grounds on which you could affirm a dismissal of the case.
But it was only dismissed without prejudice. Surely you would agree that without prejudice is a stronger version of dismissal.
Sure.
It's more.
Oh, sure.
So how can we do that?
Hey, Anna, with prejudice dismissal would give us reasons. Would give us real reasons that the court. I understand why the court did it from a practical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But it would give us real reasons, sort of grounded in the case law, and we'd know if he applied Colorado River or not.
Well, and we were pretty frank in our brief, acknowledging that there's a 10-part test that you go through under Colorado River, and that he did not go through the test, and that if you're going to treat this as an abstention ruling, you send it back to him, have him do the proper analysis. I will say, in terms of the litigation, it's a somewhat complicated history, but Mr. DeRee asserted a claim in this litigation that relates to a Connecticut injunction. His client then assert a claim relating to the filing and prosecution of the interpleader case. Mr. DeRee has off in St. Clair County a separate lawsuit. It's a 12-count, 62-page complaint, in which one of the claims, and we attach it to our appendix, is identical to the ones that his clients are prosecuting in federal court. To make things even more complicated, there is pending at the Illinois Court of Appeals yet a separate lawsuit filed by other clients of Mr. DeRee, in which the substance of those claims are identical to the claim he's prosecuted in the federal court here. So what you have is Mr. DeRee teeing it up so he has two bites at the apple, because every time he wants to assert an abuse of process and malicious prosecution claim in his own behalf, he chooses one forum, and then he has his clients choose a different forum to prosecute essentially the same claim. And so DAI has the burden of winning not once but twice in all these different places. And so from a practical standpoint, I think that abstention could very well have been warranted, given the fact that you had essentially a duplication of the claims. I think a privity issue is a real issue, because you had essentially the lawyer having his clients run off and file claims in one place. He would file claims off in another place. The claims, he splits his own claims between different lawsuits and different forms. And at the end of the day, I can understand Judge Steele's sua sponte order to put things on hold to see how the Illinois appeals got resolved. And we're now, when we briefed this, there was only one appeal that is referenced in the order that was at issue. There is now a second appeal where we're briefing it, which relates directly to the DeRee counterclaim. So I think that Judge Steele's instincts were probably...
Was one of these argued on October something of this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, October 8th or something, yeah.
That was Mr. DeRee's appeal.
Okay.
And the issue in Mr. DeRee's appeal relates to the filing and prosecution of the interpleader case, which the Jannad has asserted here. So you do have a lot of what I would think claim splitting going on. You have
and none of those, the two Illinois cases, we don't have any final ruling on any of those.
No final ruling.
Not yet. Okay, I just wanted to check.
The first has been argued, the second is being briefed. But so I think his instinct may have been the correct instinct, but I can't sit here and tell you that he went through the kind of analysis that this court requires in order to justify an abstention. So I think one way to deal with this is to say ask him to clarify the intent of his order and direct him, to the extent that he was seeking to abstain from deciding this, to go through the analysis that's required under this court's prior decision.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. DeRee. We'll give you 2 minutes, Mr. DeRee, if you're discussing.
Thank you, Judge Wood.
Sure.
I would respectfully submit I'm not teeing up anything. I did not want Judge Steele to issue an order dismissing these claims without prejudice, and neither did anyone. No one asked him to do that. The Swerved Up case happened to be Judge Steele's case. And in footnote 2, the court noted that it had jurisdiction under 1292A1 because the essence of that was the same as an injunction, because it prohibited the parties from proceeding with the claim. The same analysis applies here. In addition to appellate jurisdiction, because all claims have been resolved, there's nothing left. There's nothing pending in the state, in the federal court, in the district court. In addition to jurisdiction under 1291, for that reason, there's jurisdiction under 1292A1 because what Judge Steele did is stay these claims, stay resolution of the claims on the pending motions to dismiss. I also have a separate issue, but if the court concludes it doesn't have appellate jurisdiction, I didn't get to that, about dismissal of the complaint without prejudice over the objection of the defendants, which is a separate issue in the brief if the court gets past the jurisdictional point. But in any event, I believe there is jurisdiction under Swerved Up versus Edwardsville, under 1292, under 1291 as well. And I believe definitely the case should go back and Judge Steele should rule on the merits of the motions to dismiss under 12b-6. The state court proceeding does not preclude him from doing that whatsoever. There is no splitting of claims. None of the claims in the state court case are the same claims between the same parties as any of the counterclaims in the federal case, period. The fact that there are claims that have similar legal issues and once decided by the appellate court might be argued as having some precedential value does not make them the same claim for purposes of the Rooker-Feldman doctrine or collateral estoppel or any such arguments. And if the cases had been, if the court had been, district court had decided things on the merits, of course we'd be able to address those with some specificity. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.